Welcome to the Advisor Pack monthly session. This is Mark Little. You know, the commitment to deliver truly comprehensive financial services, not just at any level, but at a level that's actually going to get the attention of your clients enough so that they will introduce you to everyone that they know. Well, delivering comprehensive financial services at that level, it isn't easy. But you can do it. And this is the session where we come together each month, and we're going to show you how. So each month we get together, we address your questions that have been submitted during the month. I select a handful of questions that I feel like represent the greatest benefit to the greater group. So I encourage you to submit questions to us prior to this session. If you submit your question within 24 hours prior to us going live each month, we will consider your question for inclusion in this session. So today's questions follow a definite theme. We have questions mainly having to do with the big picture. So we got this question in: how do I explain truly comprehensive financial services to my staff? It's in a sense a follow on to conversations that we've had in the past of how to explain truly comprehensive financial services to clients. So this advisor writes in, you know, how do I give the big picture to my staff? Same kind of conversation, but more of an internal conversation. And then we also got this question: what's my administrative manager's job? What skills am I seeking? I talk quite a bit about the administrative manager. Today we're going to go through the organizational structure, and I'll walk through what the administrative manager's job is and what their critical role is in what we're talking about here, which is delivering truly comprehensive financial services. Also got this question: I'm trying to fill all the subject matter expert roles that you've described, but in what order should I acquire these subject matter experts? Is there an optimal sequence? And then what am I looking for in an effective subject matter expert? Kind of a corollary question, not from the same individual, but a similar question. And then how often should I review the members of my team? So this, to me, told a story of the big picture. So what I'm going to do today is I'm going to take it up to the 60,000-foot view. I'm going to take the big view. I'm going to walk through it carefully. And at the end of this session, you're going to have all you need to have an effective, inspiring, compelling internal conversation regarding what we're trying to accomplish here. So let's start with this. Every team member that you invite onto your team needs to agree to four things. So this is in essence a pledge from each member of your team. First and foremost, our job is to deliver truly comprehensive financial services through a team of subject matter experts. So we're not going to just deliver financial services. We're not going to pick and choose one or two fields of personal finance like money management or financial planning or insurance or estate planning, etc. We're not going to pick one or two or three of these specialties. We're going to deliver all of it. Our job is to get each of our ideal clients' financial houses in perfect order and keep it that way for the rest of their lives. And so it's a pledge, and everybody on your team needs to understand that our job is to deliver truly comprehensive financial services. And you need to define that. As leader of your team, you need to define exactly what you mean by that. And what we mean by that in truly comprehensive financial services is that we are taking care of the entire personal financial affairs for this ideal client, their family. So it's not a family office. It's basically a client hiring you to lay out all of their financial objectives and for you to do basically three things. So your team creates and updates and provides supervision and control over a what we call a comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy. And we commit to doing the following three things. We're going to ensure that every goal that that each client shares with us, every financial objective, we're going to make sure that it's either on track, and or we're going to proactively provide recommendations that are necessary to get that goal back on track. So every time we meet with a client, right out of the gate, our commitment is the very first thing we're going to do is we're going to list all the financial goals, all the goals that the client has shared with us, and we're going to report that they're on track. Or we're going to report that they're not on track, and then we're going to proceed in the meeting to discussing and making specific recommendations, very specific recommendations of exactly what needs to happen for each and every goal to get back on track. Secondly, we're going to be very, very proactive. So the commitment of every team member is to be so proactive that there are never any financial surprises and no missed opportunities. So when I say financial surprises, that would be things like tax surprises, like, whoops, unfortunately, we have to, you know, an unexpected tax bill that we got to write a check for, or maybe a surprise having to do with missing a deadline for some kind of an enrollment period or something at their company or within their own company. The point is that nothing's ever going to blow up. We're going to commit as a team to being so proactive that there will never be any financial surprises if it's predictable. And beyond that, we're going to do such a great job at creating projections and scenarios and thinking all the possible, you know, worst case scenarios, et cetera, that we're going to go beyond what's predictable. And we're going to pledge that to the greatest extent that we're capable, there will never be any financial surprises in your life. And we're going to be so out in front of things that you're not going to miss opportunities. If there are tax opportunities or financial opportunities, whatever the case, you're going to, as a team, commit to being proactive, and you're going to help the client make better financial choices in all areas of their life, of their financial life. And whether this is refinancing mortgages or just analyzing the best way to purchase vehicles or any of a number of things, which accounts should their monies be sitting in to get the highest rates of return, bank interest rates and time deposits and investment accounts and suitable investments and of all the insurance policies that exist in the world, you know, which are the exact right kinds and the exact right amounts that this client needs to increase the safety of their overall strategy. So those are the three commitments. Every goal is going to be on track. Our team is going to be so proactive that there are never any surprises. We're never going to miss any opportunities. And Bill Bachrach calls this third item making smart choices about your money. So those are our three team commitments. And every deliverables team member makes an advisor pact with each ideal client. PACT, of course, is an acronym that delivers on the four client expectations that we have identified over the years that affluent clients who are seeking comprehensive financial services claim they cannot find anywhere at any price in any advisor or any advisor's team. And so here you are as a team, not only you as an advisor, but your team is agreeing to step up and make this advisor pact to cover these gaps, to fill these gaps that clients who would love to have comprehensive financial services, if only they could find an advisor who's got a team that is competent and is worthy of trust. And the four client expectations are the acronym of the word PACT. This is the pledge that your deliverables team members each make to each client is protection, attention, coordination, and transparency. So protection means that everybody on the team pledges to have the client's back and to protect the client's financial assets from any people or institutions or any influence that could endanger the client's financial assets or their financial strategy. Attention means that every team member agrees to pay close attention to the client, to each client's ideal client's financial, personal financial affairs. So much so that we can be proactive and make the necessary and required course corrections to get the client's goals back on track. So we all know that as time unfolds, goals drift off track. And it can be for any of a number of reasons. The financial markets fluctuate, the client's own behavior fluctuates, and things happen. And so it's the commitment of the team to pay attention and to get ahead of this and to make proactive course correction recommendations in real time to get the clients back on track. Coordination is a commitment on every team member's part to collaborate with the others on the team and to make sure that every recommendation that comes forth from the team is in alignment with the client's comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy. And then transparency is to make sure that everything is upfront and fully disclosed. There are no conflicts of interest, and certainly no potential conflicts of interest that have not been clearly identified and disclosed to the client. And every team member agrees to this disclosure and to that level of transparency. And it's the job of each deliverables team member to go far beyond these first three points and to do all of this in a manner that delivers an extraordinary client experience. So we're not talking about punching a clock or just ticking off a checklist to do all these things. We are going to agree as a team to do all of these things so extraordinarily well that this client is going to have an exceptional experience as we go through this. We're not going to just do our job kind of as a 9-to-5 job requirement, but rather each individual on the team agrees, we all agree that we're going to give our best efforts, that this is different. This model is better. And these clients deserve what we call our team's discretionary effort. It's that little bit of extra effort beyond what's required to not only do the job, but do it in such a way that it delivers an extraordinary client experience. So these are the four things that every team member agrees to. Now, further, it just needs to be said to your team, especially if there are members of your team that are coming into this new business model, this delivery of truly comprehensive financial services project. It's important if you're bringing anybody with you on the team from your old way of doing things that you get an agreement up front from everyone on the team, especially people that have been working with you a while, that this is a new business model. This is a different business model than you've been implementing in the past. You need an agreement to that. And you need everyone on the team to acknowledge that we're going to treat this as a fresh, new process. Everything that we're going to create is going to be created under a new process. And we're going to create new processes to define and implement what we're calling truly comprehensive financial services. And we're going to create processes to work together as a team. And we're going to start this new business model with a clean sheet of paper. We're not going to clutter up this new business model with the way we've done things in the past. This is a proactive decision, and as leader, as trusted advisor, it's your job to convey to the team that we are starting fresh. We are starting with a new sheet of paper, and we're not going to try to twist this new business model, this truly comprehensive financial services. We're not going to try to twist that concept into a pretzel in an attempt to shape and mold it into something that matches our old processes. And the reason I say this is it's a natural tendency of a team to try to implement new ideas in a way that are as seamless and easy as possible. And And oftentimes what that means is to keep the old legacy processes in place and then just consider this new thing as an add-on, a bolt-on to what you've been doing in the past. And I can tell you from experience, if you do that, it will create a complete and total mess. And I can predict that sight unseen, not having seen anything of what you've done in the past. That if you want your clients to experience truly comprehensive financial services at an extraordinary high level, such a high level that you represent a monopoly in your community, you represent something that your client cannot find anywhere at any price, then you're going to need to, in essence, mentally agree. Each member needs to agree to, in essence, abandon the old way of doing things and view this new business model as a new thing and creating new processes around it and have a bias towards eliminating old processes in favor of new processes that you creatively develop in order to deliver this new thing called truly comprehensive financial services. So abandon the past. The agreement of the team is that you're going to create new processes to deliver continually greater value to every ideal client. One of the aspects of what we're doing and what we're asking our team to do that is different from before, in addition to delivering on comprehensive financial services, is the willingness on the part of the team to make a commitment to continually progress and to continually stretch and grow, to continually view what we're doing as a project to add greater and greater and even then greater value to each and every client relationship. And what we're not looking for is a team that, you know, we're going to build this business model called and deliver truly comprehensive financial services. And once we have it built, we'll rest on our laurels and we will, just deliver what we've developed. No, this is a process of continual improvement. And as we say to just take it to the next step and how we measure this, we're not going to stop until every single ideal client describes us as indispensable. And we do have a measurement for that. We have the advisor value score, which you can review past sessions to listen to how that works. But in essence, every client is going to score you and your team. And until 100% of your clients describe your team as indispensable, then your team is going to agree to continually stretch and grow and add even greater value to clients. And I can tell you from experience, and I've been doing this 30 years, I do not have 100% of my clients describing us as indispensable. I mean, if you can get to 98, 99% of your clients, then, you know, you're doing great, but you'll never get there. So maybe you will. Maybe you'll far surpass my team and me, but I'm telling you that until every client describes you as indispensable, you've got to get your team's commitment to continually agree to brainstorm and consider ways to add even greater value. Why is this? There is this question in the mind of many on your team saying, but the client's only paying for a certain amount or a certain level of service. Well, you could take two views of that statement. You could say that's undeniable. It's a business issue. It's a business concept. And, you know, how can you deliver beyond what the client is paying? Well, this is a separate issue. And I will talk to you as the advisor separately on this. We have had sessions on structuring your compensation. And my response is always the same. Most financial advisors underprice what they deliver. So don't make that mistake. Structure your compensation in such a way that you can compensate your team envisioning this so that your team will be in a process of continual improvement. And that being said, each subject matter expert on your team, in my experience with our team, doesn't need to invest more than 2 business days per client per year. That's 8-hour days. So that's 16 hours per client per year. And that includes the time of their support people. So that's just a broad measure, but I will tell you this. Where the secret lies in continual improvement in a finite amount of time being invested is in the 80-20 rule. So we have a session on the crucial few, which is the 80-20 rule, and I'll invite you to go back and listen to those sessions where we describe the law of the crucial few, but that is the secret here. The secret is to continually provide leadership for everyone on your team, all your subject matter experts, including your administrative manager, and to just pose the reality, which is only 20% of what we do represents 80% of the value of what the client perceives of what we're doing for them. And so said another way, 80% of what we do is only driven by 20% of our activities. And so if your team will continually study that and embrace that, then the corollary is also true. You could either dump or delegate or delay 80% of what you're currently doing, and it would only have a 20% impact in the client's mind. So you could completely stop doing 80% of what you're currently doing, your activities during the week, and the clients would only have a 20% view of a reduction of value. And so I'm saying that the challenge and the leadership job here is to get your team to identify which is the 80 and which is the 20. What's the 20% of what you do that's creating 80% of the value for each individual client? And it may be client by client. It may be individual for each client. And then corollary, for each client, what are the 80% of things that you're investing time doing for that client that they only view with a 20% value? It's a substantially reduced value. If you will continually focus your team, and if your team will agree to continually focus on that, ponder that challenge, what are the 80, what are the 20, and continually improve and focus on the 20% that provides 80% of the value and expand on that, then you'll see your numbers of percentage of clients that describe you as indispensable rise dramatically with really zero increase in additional time invested by your team. So finally, we have our team mantra. Every team member agrees to the following pledge. This is by way of a priority. And it basically has to do with making decisions of how to do things. And what you have to, when you're posed with a new thing that you are trying to do for a client, or if an issue comes before your team on behalf of a client, this is the approach. This is the mantra that your team needs to agree to always take. And it is, what's best for our client always comes first. What's best for the team comes second. And what's best or easiest for an individual team member comes last. And if you'll stick with this priority, what you'll discover is that the natural tendency of individual team members to propose ways of doing things that are easier for them get crowded out by ways of doing things that may not be as easy for individual team members, but they are superior and optimal and much better for the team. Or focusing on things that are best for the client, doing things in a way that it's best for the client first and best for the team second, and really with very little regard to what's easiest for individual team members. This flips upside down the priority of the way organizations typically work, and it's a different view of efficiency, but it focuses on client value. See, the goal here is, if you're going to be getting more referrals, then our premise here is that you're going to be getting, you need to become more referable. So to get more referrals, you need to become more referable. And that means that in the minds of the clients, not in the mind of your team or any kind of subjective view from the internal assessments as to what you're doing, they are irrelevant. The only vote that matters is your client's vote stating that you're indispensable. I can go through the numbers with you, and if you have questions about the numbers, just ask, and we will go through that in one of these sessions. But the reality is, in organizations where you see increasing rates of clients indispensability, viewing you as indispensable. Those are the organizations, not surprisingly, that the clients are doing the marketing for the advisor, that clients are so impressed with what you're doing, and they see what you're doing is so different and so valuable, and so it's so worrisome to the client, the prospect of something happening and not having the team on their side is so worrisome that they share this with everyone that they know. Seth Godin says it in an interesting way. He says, you need to be remarkable so that your clients will remark about you. And that's the goal is, and you get that by getting your team to agree that this is a brand new business model. We're going to approach this fresh. We're going to ditch what we've done in the past. We're going to take out a clean sheet of paper. We're going to move forward, and we're going to view this whole thing as a new business model and treat it that way. So I'm going to contend that there are three ongoing projects. The first is building your team. The second is leading your team. And that's the job of you as a trusted advisor primarily, but also your administrative manager, and delivering truly comprehensive financial services. So as you sit down with your team and you explain this, you say, this is what we're doing. We're building our team. We're leading our team. We're delivering truly comprehensive financial services. And everybody on the team can help with all three of these. So let's go into it. This comes first. So I'm gonna suggest that building your team is the very first step. What building your team does is it allows you to deliver. Once you've built your team or get in the process of building your team, you get a twofer. You now have a team, and your team is delivering truly comprehensive financial services. So that's what, and I'll come back to leading your team in a minute. But when I say building your team, that means getting into place the people that are necessary to deliver truly and remarkable comprehensive financial services to your clients in a way that clients claim is not available anywhere. So let me just launch into this by starting with explaining the traditional financial services model. So this is what's in the heads of clients, and this is typically what's in the head of your subject matter expert when you first sit down as an advisor and talk to your subject matter experts and try to explain what you're doing before you invite them onto your team. So the traditional financial services model is you have a client who needs all these things. They need, you know, they typically have financial people already in their lives when you come across them, but it's structured in this way. They needed somebody to do their taxes, so they went out and they found somebody. They probably asked for referrals, but however, whatever the case, they found a tax person to do their taxes. They needed somebody to help them manage their money. They could be doing it themselves, but many clients do have money managers, even if it's mutual funds, that they've never met the money manager. But whatever, you've got clients, typically they've got some form of money management before you come work with them, even if they're just working with their bank or picking mutual funds with a dart out of the I say out of the newspaper, but that dates me. But in any event, clients typically have money managers in some form before they come and meet you. They may have a financial planner. That's unusual, but it's possible. But if they found one, they found them on their own. And they typically have a lawyer. It's usually an estate planning attorney that created their wills and trusts. But they have that individual because they found them on their own. And they have insurance agents because they typically, your ideal client, they have a residence, they have vehicles, and they all need insurance. So somehow, some way, they found an insurance agent who is selling them insurance policies. So the things to notice about this model and what makes it dysfunctional and makes it a model that the clients do not like are several things. One is that who's the point person here? Who's the coordinator? Who's the individual providing oversight? It's the client. The client is juggling all these relationships. The client found these individuals independently of each other, typically. And most notably about this model is these individuals do not talk to each other. So the tax person's not regularly speaking with the money manager. If there's a financial planner, they're not typically talking to the money manager and the tax person and the others. The lawyer doesn't typically talk to the money manager or the tax person, and the insurance agents never talk to anybody other than the client. All of these people are doing their jobs in isolation without coordination, without any attempt to collaborate with each other. So in comes our new model, truly comprehensive financial services, and in steps what we call the most trusted advisor. The ideal client trades their position of interacting with all these individuals themselves and coordinating all these relationships, and now they just have one single simple point of contact. They've established that there's an individual that they've found who is not only competent, but is also worthy of trust. An advisor that the client can share all of their financial objectives, can share all of their financial information and documents, and this individual will coordinate everything. This individual, in essence, will make an advisor pact with them to protect them, to pay attention to everything, to coordinate everything, and to be fully transparent, and to make sure that that their financial objectives are on track and that they will accomplish what they are attempting to accomplish financially by the target date that the client sets. If not, the client agrees to shoot up a flare immediately and to make recommendations to get back on track. So the key to this working is building a team of subject matter experts and hiring an administrative manager to be the coordinator, the project leader, as it were, of this team of subject matter experts to implement truly comprehensive financial services. So my friend Rick Barrera uses the metaphor of an office chair, a swivel chair, where you're in an office chair that swivels back and forth. And so the trusted advisor in their swivel chair is facing the client and investing most of their time face-to-face or on the phone interacting directly with clients. And the administrative manager in their swivel chair is swiveled around the other way, facing the team, making sure that the team is accountable to everything that we're going to talk about here in a minute, but in essence, delivering truly comprehensive financial services. So the trusted advisor no longer is a subject matter expert. The subject matter experts fully take on the role of delivering everything that needs to happen in order for a client's house to be in perfect financial shape and to stay that way forever. And they coordinate through the administrative manager, who is the information czar. And so the administrative manager and the trusted advisor are back to back in their swivel chairs. And then occasionally the trusted advisor swivels around briefly, and so does the administrative manager. And now the trusted advisor is facing the team for about 20% of their time during the week. And they are absorbing from the team all the great work that they've done on behalf of the client. And so then the trusted advisor is tasked with ensuring that the team is fully delivering on the promise of the advisor pact, okay? And providing primarily oversight. So the key to this whole thing working is getting a very strong administrative manager in place. So let's talk about that for a minute, the administrative manager's critical role. What is an administrative manager doing? Well, the administrative manager's job primarily is project leader. And when I say project leader, I mean this is an individual with leadership skills who is in this position, making sure that there is continual forward movement on the part of the team to implement truly comprehensive financial services. That if the job is to deliver comprehensive financial services and to do so in such a way that delivers an extraordinary client experience, that this project leader is an individual who will make sure that that never stalls out, that there's never a time that the trusted advisor looks at the at the project and says, we've stalled out. That this person, this administrative manager, agrees that it is their job to make sure that there's continual forward progress. And so if they're a project leader, then what's the project? Well, it's important that the administrative manager understand that it's their role to be the client experience coordinator. So to look at the advisor value score, to get to know the ideal clients as they're coming in for meetings, there's interactions to schedule and reschedule appointments, all the interactions with the client that involve the administrative manager, it's the job of the administrative manager to ensure that the client experience is extraordinary. And the skills we're looking for in an administrative manager when you're filling this position are pretty straightforward. We need leadership skills. And I'm going to go through the five essential elements of an extraordinary leader towards the end of this session. But we're looking for leadership. We're looking for attention to detail. And personally, I believe that this is so critical that I don't believe it's trainable. I think people are either careful or they're careless. And so when you bring in an administrative manager, you need to provide testing, or you need to assess in advance of the hire all kinds of things for them to do to see, do they follow instructions? Do they pay attention to detail? Are they careful? Because I don't believe that an individual who's careless can be trained out of that. I believe if someone's careless, they're careless. And that people who pay close attention to detail, that yes, it's a trained skill in many ways, but it's also a way of being. And people who have pay close attention to detail do this for their own reasons. And they've learned in the past that it's the only comfortable way for them to exist in a business environment. And so you are looking for someone who is paying close attention to detail and is very careful. And if you see evidence of an individual who is careless or makes mistakes frequently or just makes small mistakes every once in a while, this is unacceptable. We're in a world with our clients that if a wrong number gets in front of a client, or if a report is incorrectly created, or if there's some mistake in the papers that get in front of a client, this is impossible to earn back. So it's we're living in a world where a 99% won't cut it, that we're looking for 100% every time. So when we're dealing with clients and we're putting things in front of them, this administrative manager is an individual that as they're receiving work from the subject matter experts, they are holding the high standards to the subject matter experts, and they themselves as administrative manager are doing the best they can to look for errors, and they catch everything. And if anything slips through your administrative manager, you cannot have someone who's careless in this job. This individual must be proactive. That means proactive means getting ahead of things, that to the extent that's feasible in life, this is an individual that's ahead of the problems and never finds themselves behind the problems. And an individual who's resourceful, and I could define resourcefulness in many different ways, but in essence, they will get things done one way or the other. If this individual finds an obstacle to getting things done prior to a client progress meeting, for example, they'll work with other team members to fill in the gap and make sure that everything gets done. So it's not the administrative manager's job to do everything. It's the administrative manager's job to make sure that everything gets done. And a skilled administrative manager will know the difference. And you're looking for someone who's self-disciplined, that shows up on time, puts in the hours required, doesn't punch a clock, you know, doesn't leave at 5 o'clock if there's still important critical work to be done for a client, but nevertheless plans their work well and is self-disciplined to get the work done in the time that they commit to. So it's an individual who you don't have to manage so much. They're semi-autonomous, they're self-disciplined, and they're very, very reliable. I think the key here is the old adage of hire slow, fire fast. So be careful when you hire an administrative manager. But once an administrative manager's in the position, it's not cold and cruel to let them go quickly if it's not a good fit. It's the most generous thing that you can ever do to an individual is to politely disengage if it's not working out. As uncomfortable as it is in the moment, it frees individuals to then go and find things in their life that they're more well-aligned at doing. And your clients deserve someone who has all these capabilities. We're looking for this skill. The rule of threes is what we recommend. Do not hire an administrative manager until you have interviewed at least three viable candidates. In other words, three individuals that you would hire. So you may have to interview 10 or 20 to find three, whatever the number, but you keep interviewing until you find three candidates that you would hire. You have at least three interviews by three different people. So that would be you, maybe someone close to you, even a spouse, someone who is a mentor of yours, perhaps an associate, a past associate, someone you respect who manages people well and that you respect their opinion. I personally, and this is a judgment call on your part, I like asking an ideal client if they would mind interviewing a potential finalist before I hire them. And this is a risky situation, but I have found that clients intuitively know that you're hiring an exceptional administrative manager actually affects them. And if you've got people like I did who, you know, are corporate legends, people who have, you know, been at the top levels of management or have owned their own companies for decades, you'll never find somebody with better skills and with more skin in the game for you having an administrative manager than one of your ideal clients. But that's entirely up to you. The rule of threes came from a book that I read by Brian Tracy quite some time ago, but I've always implemented the rule of threes and recommend that you do the same thing. So what is it that we're looking for in an administrative manager? Well, we're looking for an administrative manager that understands the trusted advisor's priorities, that understands and measures that the trusted advisor should be investing 80% of their time, 80% of their time in these two activities, face-to-face or on the phone serving ideal clients, or face-to-face or on the phone with potential clients. And that's it. And that often that means turning off the advisor, turning off the computer, getting out of the office, either investing time on the face-to-face or on the phone, serving ideal clients or interacting with potential clients. So if you're at a point where you've got a very small number of ideal clients, then the amount of time face-to-face or on the phone serving ideal clients under the three-meeting process is relatively small. It represents something like 4 hours, not to exceed 4 hours usually, per client per meeting cycle. A meeting cycle is 4 months. You're meeting with clients every 4 months under the three-meeting process. So that means three times a year. That's 12 hours per year per client per year, per ideal client. So notice here we're not saying face-to-face or on the phone with non-ideal clients. That doesn't count. 80% of the time of an advisor's time should be invested face-to-face or on the phone, either serving ideal clients or going out and finding new potential clients. And we need an administrative manager that's all over that and realizes that the role of the rest of the team is everything else and to protect the time of the advisor. So an administrative manager that grasps their priorities is part of the critical aspect of this. Matter of fact, when I'm looking at anyone in any job, the first thing I ever ask them is, what are your priorities? Because I understand, having been a business owner for 30 years, that the number one key to the effectiveness of an individual is, do they understand their priorities? Yes or no? And so these are the priorities that your administrative manager not only needs to understand, but needs to embrace and agree to take on and to make sure that this happens. So how do you find an extraordinary administrative manager? Well, it's easy. The same way that you're going to find your subject matter experts, and that's implementing our deliverables team recruitment process. It's a 12-step process. It's designed to find deliverables team members one at a time, so you don't focus on filling three positions at once. If you're looking for an administrative manager, you focus exclusively on that. And the deliverables team recruitment process, which I will not describe here, but we do provide for you elsewhere. And if you have a question about that after after this session, you could submit that as a question and we'll answer it in future, address your question in future sessions. But that being said, your job is to implement the deliverables team recruitment process and acquire a single team member every 60 days. That's the commitment, to use this 12-step process to acquire a new team member every 60 days, starting with your administrative manager. So it's key, because after you've acquired your administrative manager, then the deliverables team recruitment process, this 12-step process to fill gaps on your team, is the responsibility then of your administrative manager under our system. Yes, as advisor, you have to be involved. You have to interview the candidates and you have to, you know, strike a deal with them ultimately to join your team. But after your administrative manager's in place, yes, you need to be involved, but that's part of the 20% of your time. 80% of your time is, you know, face-to-face or on the phone with ideal clients or potential clients. And in that 20% of the time, you are following your administrative manager's lead in filling all the subject matter expert roles. So the key is get your administrative manager in place first. And the way you find them is the same way for filling any of these positions. And that is you and everyone close to you, that is to say your spouse, your brother, your sister, your parents, if you have anybody working in your office now, every one of you, and you as the trusted advisor included, you're going to email everyone you know. And each individual, you and your spouse and everyone you know, anyone close to you, are going to send out at least 500 emails. Now, I've been doing this for a long time, and the reaction that I always get when I say this is, 500 emails? I don't even know 500 people. You'd be surprised. You just go through your inbox and start collecting email addresses of people that have emailed you. You may have to go back 18 months. You may have to go back more than 2 years. At some point, you will have a list of at least 500 emails of people that you've interchanged with over the last few years. And what do you care who they are? I mean, some of them may be people that you know very slightly. Some of them may be people that you'd forgotten about completely. But in any event, you're going to send them an email saying, I have a position to fill, and I wondered if you knew of anybody. I'm looking for an administrative manager. You explain in the email what you're looking for. And we always recommend that you attach a PDF of a one-page flyer describing the position. Something that if they work in an office environment, they could print it out and post it on the bulletin board over the water cooler. And so, or if they're at a, you know, anyway, you get the idea. Send an email with a one-page PDF attachment describing what you're looking for and making sure that the email has and the PDF both have your contact information on them so that the individuals that are interested in the position can reach you directly. So send that out to everyone you know, and don't be discriminating about who you send it to. Just have you and everyone close to you email everyone. That's how we've filled every administrative manager position in our firm over the years. Now, there are other ways to do this. You can hire agencies and so forth. But this, by far, we've tried them all. I've paid headhunters. I've tried many different things. This process has worked better than any other process ever. And then as you identify candidates, make sure that you don't just interview everybody that comes in. Have a process. And anyway, the point is that you want to test them further, how careful they are and so forth, before you sit down and invest the time to interview them. Have some sort of a next step, even if it's asking them to provide you with a one-page essay about the skills that you're looking for in an administrative manager, and having them explain to you in a one-page essay what they've done. Not not what they want to do for you, but what they've done. What have they accomplished in the past that exhibits these attributes that we have listed that we're looking for in an administrative manager? So now switching, that's the way you're going to fill every position, including subject matter experts. So we got this question, what am I asking specifically subject matter experts to do? Well, going back to the same graphic under our model of truly comprehensive financial services, this is the oversight team. These are your subject matter experts that create the client's comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy. These are your subject matter experts. You're going to find an individual, a single individual, in each of these areas of personal finance. And they are going to provide oversight to make sure that the client's comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy unfolds properly. So you're looking for four things as you sit down and interview candidates to fill each of these five subject matter expert positions. And what you need to tell each subject matter expert as a part of your conversation to see if they're a good fit in joining your team is that what your expectations are. And we have quite a process in the deliverables team recruitment process of getting at these four things to make sure that these four things are in place. But let me just lay them out for you. The four things that your expectations are of a subject matter expert are, number one, they have to already have a proactive professional process in place. Try saying that fast three times. They need to have a proactive professional process in place already. Now, when I say process, notice I didn't say documented process. I've been doing this for decades. I have never encountered a subject matter expert that, to my standards, have their process documented at the time that I met them. We do ask them, that's part of our process once they're on board, is to get every subject matter expert to document their process using our method, which is the best way method of documenting processes. It's an easy one-pager describing their process. But before we get there, we just have to convince ourselves that even if it's not documented, this individual has a proactive professional process. And as a matter of fact, that they have a process that is more robust than my current deliverables checkpoints. So if you're working with us through the Trusted Advisor Toolkit, we have 143 deliverables checkpoints that we have the subject matter experts cycle through annually to accomplish for each client. And those 143 deliverables checkpoints are split up and assigned to each of the five subject matter experts. So they each have their assignments. And what we're looking for is for a subject matter expert to look at your deliverables checkpoints and say, hey, that's great. Those checkpoints are great for my narrow field of finance. The problem is my process is much more robust. And your checkpoints are a good start, but my process is far more thorough. And that's what you're looking for, because our deliverables checkpoints are designed as a safety net to do two things. One is to stimulate thought about this client, and secondly, to make sure that nothing major falls through the cracks, that there is a consistency in our team process. And it's designed to stimulate conversation among subject matter experts. So your number one expectation is that before they look at your deliverables checkpoints, they already have a proactive professional process. They know exactly what to do when they're confronted with an ideal client that meets your ideal client profile. They're used to dealing with that type of individual, that type of family, and they know what to do. You don't have to tell them anything. They will pull you through their process. You don't have to push them through yours. That's number one. Secondly, they have to be willing to collaborate with the other subject matter experts in between client progress meetings. So one of the things that radically differentiates you and your business model from other financial advisors out there is, first of all, you have a team. Almost no financial advisor has a full team like we're describing. But even if they did, the idea of that team collaborating, that's a big problem out there, and clients know it. The fact that their team even if they as a client are coordinating their team, the fact that their team never talks to each other, that they know intuitively, affluent clients intuitively know that a team that doesn't communicate with each other or collaborate is a dysfunctional team. And so you are looking for subject matter experts who are willing to collaborate with the other subject matter experts on your team in between meetings, and they understand the value of being a team player, and that prior to every client progress meeting, every subject matter expert agrees that they will review the work of the other subject matter experts that's been prepared for that meeting. So we say prior to every dry run prep meeting. And if you're new to the system, a dry run prep meeting, maybe a new term, what that means is it's an internal meeting. The client is not present. It's a meeting that we insist upon in our team that is 7 to 10 days before the actual client meeting. So the deadline for your subject matter experts to get everything in has to be well before the dry run prep meeting, usually about a week before. And that in that week, after everything's been submitted by all the subject matter experts, you are looking for a subject matter expert who understands your expectation that they will invest that week before the dry run prep meeting, reviewing all the work of the others. And that they will come to the dry run prep meeting having absorbed what everybody else has completed, so that they can think about crossover issues, they can think about issues that are bigger in scope and context for this client, and they understand what the relevant issues related to this client as we're approaching this meeting and entering this dry run prep meeting, which is in essence a dress rehearsal to discuss the conversations that we need to have with this client in about a week. And the fourth thing is they have to be willing to contribute at every dry run prep meeting. They cannot sit there in silence. Most of these dry run prep meetings for most of you that we work with are online meetings, just like we're on right now. So, everybody's sitting at their desk. Everybody pulls the meeting up on their screen. Everybody on your team, the subject matter experts, have access to all their resources right there at their fingertips because they're sitting at their desk. And wallflowers are not allowed. We are looking for, and the expectation is that every subject matter expert will contribute at every single dry run prep meeting. They are either contributing recommendations that they have developed, or if they don't have any recommendations, they are carefully listening to the recommendations of the others, and in a very collegial way, they are playing client advocate. You could say devil's advocate, client advocate. They are questioning the others' recommendations just to ensure that they understand and agree with what's being recommended, and that they understand all the details or hidden pitfalls, or you're trying to think like a client and think what issues will the client have with this? What questions will they have? And you're trying to help your trusted advisor by playing client advocate during the meeting, during the dry run prep meeting, to challenge recommendations or to clarify recommendations that are being made by the others. So these are the four expectations that you need to have for a subject matter expert. And as you narrow down and interview multiple candidates to invite onto your team, you select the one that will embrace the four expectations at the highest level. Because this is a high-performance team, you are looking for individuals who appreciate and are attracted to high standards. And these are the four standards. So, kind of winding down here, what's the order that I should acquire these subject matter experts? Well, I'm going to start by saying you don't start with the subject matter experts, that the actual process to acquire subject matter experts is led and initiated and proactively driven by the administrative manager. So you need to start there. So your first acquisition in order would be the administrative manager. Your second acquisition will be your financial planner, because financial planning touches every area of personal finance. The greatest number of deliverables checkpoints will always be assigned to your financial planner. And this is the one team member who will have the biggest, highest level view of the client. And so these are the first two hires. I would say after these two, were somewhat flexible in the acquisition order, but I'm going to give them to you anyway. But I will say that without fail, your first two should be in this order. And then we would recommend tax subject matter expert, money management subject matter expert, insurance subject matter expert, and legal subject matter expert. That will be your estate planning lawyer. And by the way, when we talk about money management, most advisors struggle with this the most because there's four areas of money management. And most advisors think they might already have that covered, but when they get into it, they realize that they only have one of the four covered, or maybe two of the four covered. And let me just say this. Once you get your administrative manager in place, an effective, strong project leader in place, and then you get your financial planner in place, after that, you may have some what I'm going to call low-hanging fruit, maybe a tax person that you've worked with over the years, maybe an estate planning lawyer that you've worked with over the years, whatever, people that you already know. I consider those low-hanging fruit. You can push them through the 12-step deliverables team recruitment process to see if indeed they are up to the high standards of what we're doing here, and to see if they are willing to meet the four expectations of a subject matter expert. And maybe you can fill a couple of positions in a 60-day period so that you acquire two subject matter experts instead of one in a 60-day period. But my point is, don't jump ahead of yourselves. Even if you have people that you've worked with in the past, don't go out of order from this standpoint. Always make sure that you acquire your administrative manager first and your financial planner second. And how often should I review these members of my team? Well, that's really quick. And we have whole modules on this as well. But just to set the expectations of your subject matter experts and your expectations, how do you achieve this continual growth? How do you achieve this state of continual improvement in terms of adding client value? Well, as a leader, you need to sit down individually with everyone directly reporting to you at least once every 4 months. That would be your administrative manager and each of your subject matter experts. So that means that three times a year, you are sitting down with these six people. And once you have your administrative manager in place, make it their job to make sure that that these meetings are on your calendar three times a year, so that that takes the responsibility off your plate to make sure they happen. These, in essence, 18 meetings per year, make that your administrative manager's job to make sure those happen every 4 months, and make sure the whole year is on the calendar at all times. And that will take that off your plate in terms of getting them scheduled. The question of what you should review when you sit down every 4 months, well, that's easy. Up front, we're kind of gone full circle here. Every team member agrees to these things: delivering truly comprehensive financial services, providing oversight over the client's comprehensive written financial strategy to make sure that goals are on track, and to make sure that we're proactive and making course corrections in real time, and that the client's making smart choices about their money, and that each deliverables team member is protecting and paying attention and well coordinating and being fully transparent with each ideal client, and delivering an extraordinary experience. Now, if you can't take those four items and sit down every 4 months and figure out where are we now and how do we make progress over the next 4 months, so that when we're sitting down 4 months from now, we're looking back over the 4 months since the last time we sat down, what progress was made in one or all of these four areas. So there's plenty to review. The conversation is rich and robust, and you're trying to measure each of these four things as far as progress. So we said there's three ongoing projects: building your team, leading your team, delivering truly comprehensive financial services. We talked about how building your team is a twofer. Once you've got your team in place, they are delivering truly comprehensive financial services. Now we've come full circle back to, what about leading the team? Well, I read an article in September of 2014 in Inc. magazine that proclaimed that there are five characteristics of an exceptional leader. And I was a little skeptical, but once I read it, I had my own opinion about this, and I totally agree. So here are the five characteristics of exceptional leaders, according to this article in Inc. magazine. So let's take them one at a time, and let me just give you from our perspective what we're looking for here, what these mean in our context. So this is you. You and your administrative manager, but particularly you. The two leadership roles in our organization are you as the trusted advisor and the administrative manager as project leader over the subject matter experts. So what does fire in the belly mean? You need to have a passion to do the best. Where we've run into problems in leadership is when a trusted advisor or an administrative manager has lower standards. So the idea of being the best and doing the best for the clients is not just a high-minded thought, but it's a passion. So to the extent that your administrative manager and you as the leader of the team have this fire in the belly to be the best, then that's what's required. That's the leadership. And this idea of forward progress, this fire in the belly to make forward progress, if the goal is to deliver truly comprehensive financial services, not just at any level, but at a level where clients view us as indispensable, well, that's a goal. And fire in the belly means that there is a passion to pursue that goal with conviction and every goal that the firm sets. But that's the fire in the belly. High standards. This is one of the biggest issues that we encounter. I thought about this and I thought, you know, whenever things go sideways, it's because either the administrative manager or the trusted advisor or both have decided it's easier to just do things a simpler way than what the standard that we're suggesting. Now, the reason our standards are so high is that they're not our standards. They are your clients' standards. So if what we're trying to do is be remarkable in the mind and the eyes of your client, then these are their standards that are high. To actually get a client so impressed that they will introduce you to everyone that they know, do you realize and does your team realize how high those standards have to be? There can be no mistakes. It has to be excellent. So high standards means, in essence, demanding the best outcomes from everyone on the team. So if you as the advisor are maintaining and insisting on high standards and your administrative manager is the same, demanding the best from your subject matter experts, then you're in good shape. Anytime you settle for less or settle for lower standards or just give up, that is where you run into problems from a leadership standpoint, and you're not delivering, you're not likely to deliver at a level that will impress the clients enough to help you grow your firm. And so one question is, are you hiring the best? So as a leader, are you hiring the best administrative manager, someone strong with from a leadership standpoint, or not? And as far as accepting and inviting subject matter experts on the team, do you have high standards when it comes to hiring subject matter experts? And is your administrative manager equally as fussy? So you want your administrative manager, you know, if you've got three candidates to be your tax subject matter expert, you want your administrative manager to have a strong opinion after having met them and interviewed them themselves and interacted with them, saying, here's what I like and here's what I'm worried about. And to make sure that you're having high standards when it comes to bringing people onto your team. Interpersonal maturity, that was suggested in the article. I got to thinking about this. I totally agree. I think in my mind, this means do you continually strive to see the best in others? You know, leaders can't be petty. Leaders can't like be finding fault all the time with the people working for them. You can't be a leader who's shooting a pistol at the feet of your team where they're dancing as you find one mistake after another. You know, if that's the case, you need to make a change and find people under you with higher standards. As far as your interpersonal maturity, it's basically self-searching. Do you wish to see the best in others? Are you looking for the good in people? Are you identifying your team's strengths and rewarding them, speaking up and compensating them for the best? If they are the best, are you pointing that out and focusing on their strengths? Resilience is the concept that, you know, do you do well with inevitable setbacks? Can you recognize as a leader that part of the process is encountering resistance and obstacles and roadblocks and bottlenecks and just expecting that this is not going to be easy? It sounds all great, but once we get into the, once we face the real world and we start dealing with trying to implement all this, it will not be easy. We will get to some point, it might go easy at first, but at some point you're going to hit the wall and you're going to realize this is what seems like a wall, but it's really just a speed bump. And so resilience is the ability of a leader to recognize in advance that we're going to have these setbacks. And so basically, can you manage through them? Can you pick up the team when they fall off their horse? Can you pick them up, dust them off, get them back on the horse, get the horse pointed in the right direction again, and get them moving? As a leader, can you deal with setbacks? And what about your own screw-ups? Can you admit your own screw-ups? That's another aspect of resiliency. And then finally, ability to manage. I think this just has to do with keeping the team's clear focus on the end goal. You've got a goal of delivering truly comprehensive financial services, not just at any level, but at a level that will be truly remarkable. Enough so that your clients will talk about it to everybody that they know. And can you keep your team focused on that goal? Can you keep the vision clear? And can you keep the team focused on that end objective? And so with that, we handled every single question today, and we did it in a sequential format that should make it easier for you and will make it easier for you to describe what we're doing to your team as you're acquiring them. That's the Advisor Pack Monthly Session for this month. I'm Mark Little, and until next month, we wish you all the best in implementing.